Draw Podcast.
Hello and welcome to our weekly sports podcast. The man who we're going to dissect what's going on around the country and the world is James Wokabi and Ken Chege, and I am Bernardo Tieno. Thank you very much for joining us. Gentlemen, let's start with what happened over the weekend. The awards were given out during the national celebrations, the 58th Jamhuri Day celebrations, and athletes were finally on the list. Which athletes were they, and what did they get awarded to them? Ken.
Thank you, Bernard. The first athlete who received this, finally, getting the...
Faith Kipyegon.
Faith Kipyegon received the Order of the Grand Warrior of Kenya. In my view, this should have happened much, much earlier, but finally it came, and we are happy that finally it did. And this is a great recognition to the Olympics.
All right, so Faith was one of them. Who's the other one, James?
Peres Jepchirchir, my athlete of the year 2021. I think she's had a wonderful, wonderful 12 months to go on and win the Olympic gold medal, and then to go on and win New York Marathon, and then finish off by getting the OGW. I think it's the perfect culmination of what's been a perfect, perfect year for
Faith
her.
Faith Kipyegon as well came home with medals as well, didn't she, from the Olympics?
Yes, she did. I mean, the gold in 1500 meters and becoming only the second African woman to win a gold, to defend your title, and in between the 4 years, take maternity leave, go on, have a child, come back and deliver. So come back and come back at the very, very same level. She did something incredible. Not many people are able to do that. And throughout the year, she was basically untouchable. And we also know what she did, which was basically stop Sifan Hassan from completing that golden triple she wanted in Tokyo. So yes, even her, she's done wonderfully well. I know people are saying, well, maybe it's taken too long, but I think, come on, she's only 27.
It has taken too long. It's not about her age.
She's only 27.
Well,
I think it was coming. And once you get the OGW, like, I mean, I think it's been worth the wait. And look, I think the president has done even more significant things in her life.
They talk about these awards and these presidential awards, there are some considerations that are made. Now, which ones were made in the case of the athletes?
I would assume it's got to do with how well you represent your country, bringing glory to your country. And I mean, there's no more glory for athletics than the Olympic gold medal. So once you go out there and you do that, it puts you at that level. We all know who's got the highest. Eliud Kipchoge.
Let's talk about that as well. There are different categories of these awards as well. There is the big one, the EBS, the Elder of the Burning Spear.
Yes. Eliud has the EGH.
EGH is the Elder of the Golden Heart.
That one. That's
now,
the one
that
Eliud
is massively
has.
Big.
That's the one he has. He got it after his Ineos, his exploits at Ineos. I mean, because he became this guy, first man to run the marathon in under 2 hours. And I think the state felt, let's commend you for this. And there's quite a few who've gotten it. I mean, Dr. Kipchoge also will have one. So when you look at it all, it's something good to have. I think it's recognition for athletes. I'm not sure what it does for them. I don't know what's the impact. Maybe I should actually ask you this, Bernard. What's the impact of having an EGH?
I am yet to have any of these. I don't even have an HSC, the Head of State Commendation. You know,
or the Silver Star.
The state just says, we recognize what you're doing in the world of commentary and football and all that, so we give you this award. That's a HSC, in recognition of what you're doing. But it, depending on what you've done, the awards go higher and higher and higher, depending on the responsibilities and the achievements you have had within a specific period. So Faith merits what she's got at the moment for the Olympic feat.
Can I tell you something that I think she got 5 years ago, and I think it was bigger when she won in Rio, and they hadn't, her parents were not able to watch her, and the president said there's got to be electricity in your village, and electricity came to her village.
Yeah,
I think that was a bigger award than
brilliant.
OGW.
But now there's no Kenya Power Awards for this, you know, that's the problem. So she couldn't get anything from Kenya Power and Lighting. But congratulations to her and to Jepchirchir as well. Not much is being said about her marathon feat. We're talking more about Faith Kipyegon. We forget her sometimes.
This is a girl who last year, December, was running in Valencia. And then she ran. We know her for her exploits at the World Half Marathon Championships. And then from there, she then moved on and decided, you know what, let me try the full marathon. She tried it in Valencia. She ran a good race. And then Athletics Kenya decided, let's include you in the Olympics team. And then she went to Tokyo, and
even sure she was going to be at the Olympics.
No, she wasn't. Because if the Olympics are held in 2020, she doesn't make the team. Vivian goes to the Olympics. But then it's 2021. Different things have happened. She's shown she can run the full marathon. And then Vivian is having a bit of a wobble and having a bit of a distraction, if I might call it. And then what does she do? She's put into the team, goes into Tokyo. Everyone is thinking, oh, Bridget Kosgei, oh, Ruth Chepngetich. But then she shows up and she wins that gold. And even just the way she was helping Bridget all the way with the water. Here's the water. Here's the ice pack.
Yeah, the sportsmanship spirit that was there.
She grew into Kenyans because, you know, you like that kind of assistance and that kind of minding your Kenyan partner. I mean, it goes again into exactly what we believe as Kenyans, you know, Harambe, all of
us
together.
Yeah, the spirit.
Yeah, and she did it all the way until she said, now let me go win this thing and then you can get your silver. Then she went to New York, again won gold. She's had an unbelievable year and she's such a cool person.
Congratulations to the two for that and also to the president for recognizing them. But I'll tell you where else Harambe was used.
Yes.
Formula One. The last race of the season. There was a Harambe. Let's start from the Harambe. What happened in terms of the team work? Let's start from there. Ken, did you watch this race?
Yes, I did.
You
Manette.
Did you see the Harambe spirit?
I enjoyed watching that race. It was almost unbelievable to see so much effort being put in, and what is amazing is that this is almost like a one man show sport, because the glory will go to only two people: one, the person who wins. And two, who is not a person, but the team, the works, the make of the car.
Okay. So that's the manufacturer.
That's the manufacturer.
Important for them as well. But let's get into the nitty gritty, and we get into the Harambe now.
Yes.
One team had to bring in two drivers to help their team to win, and they did help them to win. One driver was holding up the world champion, slowing him down, because the other one then had to make a pit stop and get onto soft tires and come back, and he's got a faster car.
Bernard, this race is nothing like I've ever watched before. The tactics that were used, the tactics that were deployed, because I think this was deliberate to distract Lewis Hamilton from taking this thing. You know, they knew that Hamilton would want to go and change his tires, but he was afraid that if he did that, then Max Verstappen would probably get a chance to overtake him. So he chose to play cool. But, you know, Verstappen and his team, oh, amazing guys. And they decided to just stick by. And then they decided to take their chances. You know, let's take our chance. Let's see whether we get it or we don't get it. They took their chance and there it was.
The safety car won it for them. James, let's talk about the safety car and how this happened.
Look, if there's an accident, the safety car will come on, slow things down to help you clear off the debris of what has happened. So that happens. And then when that happens, Verstappen takes a chance. Says, no, let me put on softs. So he puts on softs.
He went into the pit stop.
That's what I'm saying.
Let's take it from the beginning, James.
Yes.
58 laps. This is 57th lap.
Yep.
The safety car comes out. There is a rule that lapped cars can be allowed to overtake the safety car.
Yes.
They decide they're not allowing all lapped cars except the ones between number one and number two. Just five of them. Even you as a driver, you don't know that you're supposed to take off after those five cars. All right? This is after Verstappen's teammate has held him back and slowed him from 11 seconds to 1 second.
But here's the thing. Number one, team orders are allowed. So let's first of all agree that Perez is allowed to do what they did. I mean, we saw it, especially Schumacher did it quite a lot with Felipe Massa, if you remember back in the days.
Yes,
and
yes.
With Rubens Barrichello, if I'm not mistaken, used to do the same thing where, you know. So team orders are allowed. I mean, that's why it's a team sport. That's why there are two cars, not one. So that's completely within the laws. Now, the question is,
that's
what
just
happens?
Like what Kenyans do on the track when they're...
Exactly.
When they're trying to get
when they tell each other to say Diane, you
yes,
know.
Yes, yeah? Yes.
So, but
this crash could not have been orchestrated.
No. No,
it couldn't.
No, it couldn't have been. And then what happens is, the only question was, why did he then let only the few cars unlap and not all of them?
Not
that's
all
the
of
first
them.
Question.
Yes.
Second question, and I know the first, initially he said, let all of them, and then he said no.
Then they changed.
Yes, then he said, let's do that.
The
and
decision.
Then Mercedes asked, why are you doing it? And he said, listen, this is a race. I think the race director wanted to have a race. He didn't want it to end with a safety car. Let's just have a bit of a race.
But so when you change the rules, it's a how one can lap, you then consider it a race?
Number one, it's within his rights to change it.
So he's allowed to change it. So he's part of the contest now.
And then he decided, let's have a race. Let's finish. I mean, what, we're going to end with a safety car. No.
And then,
move away. All of you, move away, guys.
Now,
let's
think like Lewis Hamilton.
Yes.
You're right there behind the safety car. You see, what should happen? What should happen in this situation is you're in lap number 57.
Yes.
If everything just goes as per plan, it's only the lapped cars that will be allowed to overtake the safety car. The rest of you will just drive for that one lap behind the safety car and the race is over. That's the way it should have been. Now, you are Lewis Hamilton. You're sitting there. Suddenly, you hear, you know, we are not going to let all the lapped cars do it. And then only five are going. And then suddenly, Verstappen is out there and he's running like crazy.
It's a race. I want a race. I don't want a procession. As the race director, I want a race. I want just that. Imagine, look at, how many days later? The whole world can't stop talking about it. Why? We gave you a race. Instead of if it was a procession, 24 hours, we are done.
By changing the rules.
We just to add a bit of spice.
You should have told us about this spice earlier. We can't come for lunch. You're telling us you're going to make just plain chips and then suddenly it's masala and then it's just food. We just accept it.
The problem is Lewis Hamilton has a lot of fans, a lot of them, and they're all struggling to accept the fact that this thing changed because everyone thought we are good to go, especially when he overtook him.
They lowered their protest to the race stewards. It got dismissed. They decided to lodge the notice of their intention to appeal the steward's decision under Article 15 of the Sporting Code and Article 10 of the Judicial and Disciplinary Rules. So they are appealing even that decision by the stewards to dismiss that decision.
Yes, though there are some reports that are saying Mercedes might just look at it and say, you know what? It's okay. This is too much appealing. Let's just leave this thing. We look like sore losers. Let's just leave it and let's prepare for next year.
Yes, we will leave it and move on. But we have to look at the rules. It says the decision to only allow some lapped cars to unlap themselves is unusual. Article 48.12 suggests that the message lapped cars may now overtake should be sent to all competitors. In addition, this article suggests that with the lapped car message having come out on lap 57, the restart could only come at the end of the following lap, which is lap 58, which was the end of the race. If we're to follow rules.
That book is 99 pages of rules.
If you're
99
to follow rules,
pages.
There's
of
a
rules.
Reason why rules are put there.
And for Mr. Michael, it's called Michael Massey. For Mr. Michael Massey to decide, you know what, let's have a race. Here's the thing. If he had said it from minute one, I think the fight is not really that he changed the rule, it's the fact that he changed it twice. When Christian Horner asked, come on, we have to have a race. That's the Red Bull guy. And he said, oh yeah, by the way, let's have a race. I think that's where the main
So he was influenced.
That's where the question is. Was he influenced? Was he not influenced? But on the whole, this is wonderful for Formula One.
Is it?
Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, but not wonderful for Hamilton. But it's okay. It's okay. Not wonderful for Hamilton fans at all.
Interesting, Bernard, is that Sergio Perez has now apologized to Lewis Hamilton after helping Max Verstappen to win the title.
It just makes things worse. Let's just follow the rules. There's nothing wrong with an apology.
I think the Hamilton has too many fans. He's probably the only one that we all know. And we are all unhappy that he didn't win. For me, I would say let's accept.
You're not making things any better.
Move on.
We are talking
and
about
for
rules.
Next season.
It's not about fans alone. It's about the rules as well.
Here's the thing. Yes, he has a lot of fans. That he's British, that certainly helps because then you know what happens when anything is British. The media.
I'll tell you something.
If this wasn't just sport,
you know, would have actually pulled out the racism card and just said this is what happened because of ABCD. You know, if we didn't watch everything unfolding in front of us.
Look. At the end of the day, I think the drama is what makes it. And I'm sure at the back of it all, F1 fans and F1 guys are thinking, this is great for us. Because next year, everyone is already thinking, it's less than 100 days to Bahrain. So already everyone is thinking, let's get ready
98 days
exactly,
already. You know?
Yeah, we are ready. Let's wait for this. But on the whole, it's great for sport. And look, either of them would have been worthy winners. Let's just agree. They both have had a wonderful season. We've had all the drama throughout. Each one has been at fault.
The closest we've had in the history of
F1. Yes, they would have been
F1
wonderful winners. And when you look at both their stories, and I think this is getting lost in the whole mix, it's just how much sacrifice both their parents have had for them to get here. For me, that's actually the bigger story. Max started this at 4 years old. Lewis Hamilton started this at around about the same age, and their fathers have pushed and sacrificed every single thing to get here. I think for that, it just shows you just how how much a parent can put in or has to put in
yeah.
to enable their child to go on and get success. For, and I think that's a really, really wonderful
thing. Can you imagine from 4 years he's been working on this and then this year now the rules change in the last lap? You know how his father can be annoyed as well?
At least he's got 7 world titles to go with.
Do you know how his father can get annoyed at that?
Well, he's got seven world titles. He can afford.
It's an eighth one. It's history that you want to set here.
Well, there is.
You know,
Lewis
Hamilton is not about winning the race anymore. It's just about history now. You've got to set firsts. And this one is just being taken away from him.
2022 is just around the corner, Manaj.
Okay. We'll leave that to settle. We'll accept and move on, but not very happily. Things are happening in the continent of Africa as well. Soccer players are taking over the running of football. You heard about Samuel Eto'o, the 4-time African Footballer of the Year winner, taking over the running of Cameroon Football Association.
It's incredible what Eto'o has been able to achieve. I mean, when you think about it, he's what, 41?
Yes.
Really, really young. For him to transition from being a star footballer, one of the best players the world has ever seen, suddenly the best player Africa has ever seen, for you to transition from that into management, I mean, speaks volumes about him. And from what I have gathered, from what I have read, he just didn't wake up and decide. No, he's actually followed the proper channels, immersed himself in Cameroonian football, figured out what happens. Because think about it, for the better part of his life, he's lived it in Spain and in Italy and in England and in Turkey. But he's come back home, made all the right moves, and now he is president at age 41. And I mean, if you ever wanted someone to continue achieving, I think that's the perfect way to do it.
You know who he beat? He actually beat this gentleman called Seydou Mbombo Njoya, the 4th vice president of Confederation of African Football. He beat him to it.
Yes, he did, Bernard. But you realize Eto'o also had huge, huge support from past and present footballers, because this organization is about the footballers, and the footballers know that one of their own will definitely be in a better position to organize them. The margin wasn't too big. I think it was 43 to 31 or something like that.
That's big.
But all in all, it just goes to show what sort of confidence these people have. And I like what is going on in Africa. There's many of these footballers coming in. We've seen there's the Nigerian case where a former captain is now the coach of the national team. They have sacked the German draw. You see in Liberia, the president is one, George Weah, who's a former footballer. So it probably speaks volumes about the openings that there are in sport, and also the kind of management that these guys who have been exposed, you know, all these are the guys who've played out there, being exposed to very serious managers. You know, Eto'o has been coached by none other than Pep Guardiola, Jose Mourinho. He's had the best going for him. So he's gotten a lot of talent, and it's good to see that he's bringing back that talent home and to benefit his country.
Yep, he's been to Barcelona, to Inter Milan, to Chelsea and all that. But more importantly, there is some investor confidence in his leadership. He's talked to the business community, and it's certainly eliciting the right attention to soccer in Cameroon.
It's Samuel Eto'o. I mean, it's Samuel Eto'o. And to borrow from Kenya, it's Dr. Paul Cherka.
No, I'm giving you an example.
I'm using in terms of
okay,
of legend.
Okay, you're likening
status.
It. Yes, yeah, like you're likening it to,
like,
to a, yeah.
You're someone who is so big that people look at you and think, well, we can have faith in this man. Now, for me, the biggest thing with Eto'o is, Didier Drogba tried something similar last year.
Yes.
He didn't even get through to the nomination level. He couldn't get enough votes to be nominated to run for presidency. And that tells you a lot about the kind of work Eto'o had to do. Because Drogba is just as big a name in Ivory Coast.
If not bigger. Well, yes. He's big. He's massively
huge
big.
Huge in Ivory Coast. But he was unable to maneuver the Bernard, you know how football politics are in this part of the world and in the world generally. So for Eto'o to be able to maneuver around it and know, move this here, pull this here, move this here, move this here. Because it takes a lot of networking. And a lot of
he's got a good rapport with the business community. First of all, because he's a businessman himself, he runs a mobile telephony company.
Yes, he's heavily invested in business in Cameroon and out of Cameroon. And like I said, once you stay at home for quite a while, because since he retired, he's really hung around Cameroon quite a bit. And then you make all the right moves, you connect to that one, make sure you are in the right books with this or with that one, then it works for you. And I just hope he understands the scope of what he has gone into. Because look, when you think about the giants of African football, Cameroon is right at the top. But he hasn't been like that for a long while. So he's got a lot of work to come in and do. And he's got to do what Antoine Bell tried to run for this. He never quite got it. So he's gotten it. So now we are done with celebrating. Now turn around and say, Mr. Eto'o Fields, show us what you can do.
Interestingly, he's got endorsements from very many people who are now inviting everybody into Cameroon for the Africa Cup of Nations. And Rigobert Song, Oman Biyik, they're all saying now come to Cameroon. Roger Miller as well, they're all saying come to Cameroon. But they couldn't go in to lead the federation, could they?
Well, Bernard, I don't think we are all born leaders. And someone like Roger Miller, really, his name is far much bigger than leadership, if you ask me. Now, when I go back to Eto'o, his hands are quite full. James rightfully said, the clapping now is done. We get down to serious business. In less than a month's time, Cameroon is hosting the AFCON 2021. You know the quagmire that Cameroon has been in. They were supposed to host it last year. It was taken away from them because actually it was not held at all. Because they were not ready, the stadiums were not ready, the administration was not in order. Now he has a big chance to see, you know, to see through a huge, huge tournament, which of course means a lot to Africans. And we know that this is one tournament where even the European scouts all come calling. Is a good to display the best of our talent, and no doubt you'll see some players from here then heading off to Europe. Because they've been scouted.
Yeah, but let's talk more about him and leadership and the fact that players, and this is one of the things that he has put out, that players must take the running of football in their countries. This is what he's actually, you know, angling for. He talked about Africa having talent. He has made that very clear. He is wondering why they're not getting into leadership, why this football talent cannot be exported. What is the reason that he should be reaching out to the whole of Africa, James?
Well, because logic says, if you've been a footballer, maybe you understand where the shoe pinches the most. So maybe you would be in a better position to manage and show what you can do. So he would ideally, in an ideal situation, you want to see former sportsmen coming into managing the sports. So what do I mean? For example, if you look at the IOC and the late Jack Rogge, you look at the IOC and you see Thomas Bach. Again, sorry. If you look at NOC and look at Dr. Paul Tergat, then you're able, if you look at World Athletics and you see the Lord Sebastian Coe, people who've been there as athletes then risen up in management. So you want a lot more of that because they would have the game's best interest at heart. Now you have been, you've covered, for example, let's localize it, Kenyan sport. How many of our Kenyan footballers have been anywhere near management at the level that they would be influential? Maybe Sami Sholei, when he was first vice chairman for all of 3 months, then he couldn't take it. So he wants more people who have the experience to come in, who maybe will take the sport's best interest at heart into it. Because let's be honest, in Africa, it seems like there are sportsmen and women, and then there are administrators. They seem to be a huge divide. You be the sportsman, sportswoman, let us be managers. Whereas you get the feeling that there should be more cross.
That's what is bothering me a bit, because Eto'o has a very big record, even being the all-time top scorer of Cameroon, you know, at one point as well, becoming the only African to win the Spanish Golden Boot. He's got big, big, huge accolades.
Yes.
But it's not just about that. It could be about leadership as well. Do we have a crisis, for example, in Kenya about just the right people leading this sport? You've talked about some players who've been in that leadership. They couldn't hack it. They couldn't take it. Had to take some matters to court. Then they were booted out because you can't take soccer matters to court. Is it the quality of leadership? Is it the absence of good leadership within the footballing circles to be able to take the federation?
It's also the politicking within the sport that most of them struggle with. The politicking, other people call it networking, but it's basically the politics of the sport that become too much. They are too convoluted, especially in this country. The politics of football in this country are almost impossible to deal with. And at some point, I think they feel like this is too much work and they walk away. So it's they've got to be able to go through the politics, immerse yourself in the politics, and win through the politics. That's why I think Eto has done an incredible thing. For him to go through the Cameroonian political football politics and be able to get the 41 votes, it needs a lot of patience, it needs a lot of effort, and it needs a lot of almost maybe getting your hands dirty a little bit just to be able to get into that. And you've got to have the, number one, you've got to have the will. Number two, you have to have the natural, I'm a born leader. And I think you also have to have the finances.
Number three, you have to have a thick skin.
Yes.
Because there will be those who will want to bring you down, and they will include the politicians who want to use that platform to actually go to greater heights of politics. How do you think Samuel Eto'o will be able to keep away from that? Or is he going to change and be part of the system?
I think he's learned how to politic. He's learned how to move things politically. He's learned how to do things from a political point of view, and he's got the ability financially to be able to back himself up. Because you've got to have both. You have to have the financial muscle, and you have to be able to politic. You have to be able to play the politics of the day. Think about Nok. For the longest time, nothing changes. Peter Ken came so close to getting in. You remember? Back in football. Why? Because he was able to play the politics well and also have the financial muscle. But generally, like you said, it's more of the incumbency. The incumbency tends to stay on. So I feel Eto'o's had to learn how the politicking works. Whether you do it with being friends with Infantino at the very top, whether it's that, whether it's being able to maneuver Infantino, then Motsepe at calf level, and then all the way down, he's just been able to be able to politic and have the financial muscle to do it. Antoine Bell is a rebel, always been a rebel in Cameroonian football, but I didn't think he had the financial muscle. Because at some point, you know, Bernard, what happens in this country before football elections? You know, it's a lot of finances that have to move.
I am actually waiting for you to finish the sentence and then to ask you the same question. You know, a small bird whispered to me that when you are in that position as Federation President, you've got to do business. And you're doing business with people who want to do business. And most of these people are politicians, and they want it all. And they want you to do it their way. How is he going to cushion himself from that? Yes, he's an astute businessman. Some of these positions have a way of eating into your personal business as well.
You've got to have a goal, and you've got to have an objective and a dream. You've got to know, this is what I'm working towards. So you've got to know, how much do you give in? How much do you refuse to give in? Because again, you can't not give in at all. And on the other hand, you can't give in completely, because then what's your dream? So you've got to know, what am I coming in to work towards? What are my plans? What's my long-term goal? And then you've got to find, at the end of the day, it's a give and take. This is politics. So you've got to be able to, again, go politicking.
Let's just say Samuel Eto'o has just entered politics now, hasn't he?
Yes.
And he's got to play it correctly.
Yes.
In a country that is looked at not only by Africa, but by the whole world in terms of footballing prowess as well.
Yes.
And the business community loves to have countries like those ones to work with.
Yes. He's basically entered politics. Football and politics are the same thing. Football politics are almost at times bigger than a country's politics.
Okay. Now, there is one other thing he said in the video. Okay? There is another thing he said in the video about the abundance of talent in Africa. Well, just recently here we were told we don't have talent in Kenya, and it rubbed people the wrong way. What's hindering the export, or the first of all, nurturing of this talent and the export of this talent to benefit Africa?
Interesting that we should go back to our own lack of talent issues here in this country. Bernard, you know, for me, I think when you have Eto'o as the head of your federation, he's been out there. He knows what it means to be out there. So at the earliest opportunity, he is going to come and try and get some of the Cameroonians to go out there, to try their luck out there. He's going to try and improve. You know, there's abundance of talent, eh? Probably in West Africa, there's more talent than here, or probably they exploit their talent much more than we do here. But yes, there is talent here, and there is talent all over Africa. So he's going to try and get this talent, improve it, and make these people ready for the market out there. Because ultimately, the footballer's dream is to go out there and play for the Barcelonas, the Real Madrids, the Liverpools, the Manchester Uniteds of this world. That is every player's dream. Or at least feature in those big leagues, the EPL, the German league, you know.
He asked an important question. He asked a question. What is stopping Africa from nurturing and exporting that talent? That's what he asked.
You know, Bernard, to tell you the truth, I think it is lack of vision. because there must be a leader in this. Somebody must take the lead in this. If I have not gone through the process, then I'm going to find it difficult to take anybody through the process.
Do we have the structures in the rest of Africa to be able to nurture that talent?
Truth be told, mostly we don't. But we can take Cameroon as an example now. Now Cameroon is in the spotlight. And this is, I mean, Eto'o is going to be taken as an example, whether good or bad, yeah, by the rest of Africa.
He's pushed into Africa. He's pushed into the rest of Africa and challenged the rest of Africa. So exactly. The question is, do we have the structures? Are we ready for that challenge? James, you have a comment?
No, we are not. Because our challenges are many, from administrative challenges, lack of finances, lack of structures. I mean, we could be here all day long trying to sing why we don't go where we go. I go back to your comment. When someone said we do not have talent in this country, I think I get what he was trying to say. It's just that it came out in a completely different way. So, do we have talent that plays football in Kenya? Yes, do we have talent? Is it of the same caliber as the talent found in Cameroon?
So it was a comparative comment.
That's what I understood from it. Like,
he was like, there's talent out there.
Yeah, he was like, look, Mali have got super talent compared to us. And at times I feel it's not even a case of do we have structures? Because I don't think there is that many great structures in Mali. I don't think there's that many great structures in Guinea. I don't think there's that many great structures in
Cameroon,
Burkina Faso,
for that matter.
Yeah, but I think they just have that. It's just like Kenya. I mean, Kenya, we produce world-class athletes. Now, how many of those athletes are as a result of our structures and our administration? Or how many do we just meet at Nyayo National Stadium? We just seem to have the talent.
All right, James, the challenge has been thrown to Africa. We congratulate Samuel Eto'o and we wish his leadership all the best. I am Bernardo Tieno.
This is the Sports Draw Podcast.